This is the Living in Mid-Bloom podcast, lighthearted and heartfelt conversations about what it looks like to live, heal, and blossom in middle age. I'm your host, April Pruitt. Let's get our bloom on. Hello, Mid-Bloomers. This is April. I'm so glad that you're joining us today. I so appreciate your support. And I have a new friend I want to introduce to you. Her name is Joanne Green. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, April.
And Joanne is busy. Right now, she's got two podcasts going, and she's got a book that's coming out and will be published sometime in June. So just to give you a little more information, so she's got a co-host on one podcast. It's called All the F Words. I love that title. And her co-host is Gabby Moskowitz. Gabby is 30 years younger or so than you, and that you're offering a different perspective on the world. She as a millennial and you as a boomer. And taking a deep dive on a range of issues that happen to start with the letter F. And then you recently started a solo podcast, and I've listened to a couple of them, but you have these little short essays set to music, showcasing your funny personality and your observations. And I did listen to a couple. I listened to the one, Lost Her Phone, because yes, that's happened. And then being propositioned by a famous person. I won't go into detail to that. You guys will have to listen to yourself.
Well, the best part of it, April, was that I didn't know that's what was happening.
Yes, that
I was clueless completely. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, yeah, no.
Right. And especially somebody that's like kind of older and established, and you're like, I don't want to embarrass them yet. I want to leave right now, you know. And I want to name your book. It's a memoir. It's titled By Accident, A Memoir of Letting Go. And I think we're going to get into some of that right now. So, Joanne, you had this. And we're focusing on one piece of the book, but we're talking about the accident that you had in 2012. You were 58, and, you know, hearing about that and not really understanding what you had to go through to get to the other side. But do you want to start kind of talking about how that happened?
Sure. I remember exactly where I was going and why. It was the first debate between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney that was televised, that was, you know, being broadcast live that night. So I was leaving my job, and it was broad daylight still, October 3rd. I was at work. I was working at the time at the Jewish Community Center.
California.
And you finally feel like you're getting a handle on your life. And suddenly I'm flying through the air, and I know, because I'm totally conscious, that I've just been hit by a car as a pedestrian. And this event is not over. And
yeah. Let me ask you this, because you're kind of getting to what I was going to ask you. So you didn't even have any clue that you were going to be hit, because you did, like you said, you didn't see the truck, the car stopped. So you actually recall suddenly you're just in the air and you have no way or reason to know why that happened. Were you aware when you landed? I mean, was there immediate pain? I'm trying to just understand how that.
So in the probably 30 seconds or 20 seconds that it took for the car to continue moving with me on it, my whole body, I know, was screaming, stop the car, stop the car. I knew that the event wasn't over and that something even more horrible could happen. So when I found myself on the ground, the first thing I noted was that I was alive. That was the first thing. And no, I didn't have pain right away because I was in shock.
Yeah.
So I know a few things happened. Someone I knew, someone with whom I worked, watched it, the whole accident happen, and she came running over toward me. And then there was a police officer who was there, and she said, we have to call Fred. Fred is my husband. And she asked me for the number, and I heard my voice saying a series of numbers. But it was like that. I heard my voice saying, and
that you could even do that.
Yeah, it was sort of shocking. And here's the thing. Just right off the bat, I was worried about my husband, because my husband had been orphaned at the age of 7 because a drunk driver had a head-on collision with his parents. So his worst nightmare would be, well, maybe his worst nightmare would be for one of our kids to be in a serious car accident. But here it was, we were calling him to tell him that I had been in a serious car accident and he needed to head to the hospital to meet me.
So you were alert as this is happening. And the woman that was in the car, was she hurt in any way?
Yeah, we actually shared an ambulance to the hospital, but she was released from the emergency room and I was admitted and had to be in the hospital for 5 days.
Yeah, of course. She's inside the car. She's hit from the back, but she's hitting you, and her car, of course, is more powerful than you, and that protected her, but obviously not you. So
I was just very lucky, April, because had the car that hit me been an SUV rather than a sedan, I would have gone under and been probably killed. And then just, you know, I think sometimes I'm also somewhat of a spiritual person, but I felt like there was a little angel on my shoulder that was like, this is not your time.
Absolutely.
Something big, bad, and awful is going to happen here, but you're not going anywhere. So I had a very long recovery, you know, the full recovery, and I made a full recovery, which is also a miracle. No residual damage at all, but I had 4 pelvic fractures and all the soft tissue on the right side of my body was crushed. That took even longer to heal.
So tell me about all the injuries that you had.
So 4 pelvic fractures and a lot of internal bleeding, which was also very dicey. I could have not made it out of the hospital, because when they can't control the bleeding like that, and even if they had operated, they prepped me for surgery a couple of times, but even if they had operated, there's no guarantee that they can even see where all the blood's coming from to stop it. So I was really lucky with that.
Any head injuries or?
You know, I had a concussion, but nothing, no brain bleed. So that was wonderful.
That you could say in the midst of all of this.
Yeah. I mean, you know, even while it was all happening, survival instinct took over. And for those of you who aren't so lucky as to have survival instinct take over, I will say that we really do have a lot of control about what we think. We think that our brain just kind of works on its own. But the fact is, we can encourage our brain to go in certain directions. So one thing that really helped me throughout the recovery and since, because it's not like in the last 11 years I haven't had other things happen. I have, and some of them are in the book. Constantly reminding myself what I have to be grateful for.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to feel gratitude and feel sorry for yourself at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You really can't.
Just back a little bit. So you're both in the ambulance together. Was she conscious?
Yeah, she was actually, it's funny now, it wasn't funny then. She was going, oh my God, my car's totaled. I can't believe it. I don't know what I'm going to, she was just ranting. And I remember I couldn't speak because by then they had shot me up with morphine. And because, that pain that I said I didn't feel. Yeah, then I did. It didn't take too long. Then the pain was there. So the paramedic had given me morphine and I was like, ugh, by this point. But I remember locking eyes with the paramedic and trying to communicate, make her stop talking. Just make her stop. But I wasn't verbalizing anything at that point. And
It's so interesting, like you said, how people respond to trauma and other things that you're not prepared for. And hearing her say that, yeah, there are several problems I would have. Maybe it's good you weren't able to attack her in the... So you're in the hospital, you tell your husband. How old are your kids at that?
They're in their late 20s. Yeah, okay. They're... Oh, I can tell you exactly, because my son... My older son turned 30 a month after the accident. So they were 29 and 26.
Okay. Okay.
And so, one was in Costa Rica, finishing up a semester of business school. The other one was in Boston on a business trip. And his girlfriend at the time, with whom he was living, now wife and the mother of his children, she was in town and she came to the hospital.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
You came with your husband?
Well, separately, but
okay.
She was there at some point. And then my son came back from Boston and came directly to the hospital.
So there you are. They pop in, and is your husband, is he calm? Is he trying to calm you? Or is he, what the hell is happening?
He had definitely had a lot of anxiety, and it, you know, I was a mess.
Scared, I'm sure.
I was a mess, and he was like very officious, like we have to we have plans tomorrow and this weekend, and I'm going to cancel them, and these people are in the waiting room of the emergency room, and I don't care who's there.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, really, it was a matter for me those first few days of controlling the pain, which was severe. And also, fairly quickly, starting that night, the trauma, the emotional, psychological trauma of what had just happened reared its head. And so I was having flashbacks and, you know, I was terrified and, ugh.
I know that when I was in an accident and had a flashback, and I could like smell, you know, the smoke. So I can understand how terrifying that is, because you don't have any control over that, and it's repeating itself, you know?
Yeah. One of the ways that I got through all of this, and this was not a conscious decision, I just started doing it. I just started saying, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. Okay, I'm broken. My body is broken, and I can heal. I can. So I think I had an inner survivor that got activated, and maybe we all have that. But I believe very strongly that some of us have more of it because of our DNA, because of what our ancestors went through. You know, my ancestors, and when I say ancestors, I just mean my grandparents. My grandparents were immigrants to this country because they were being persecuted somewhere else. Mm. So I think deep in my soul or my DNA, whatever, is this, yep, you can do this.
Your grandparents, did they come from Europe?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, they fled pogroms, which were...
Yeah.
You know what pogroms were.
Oh,
so this
yeah.
was a persecution of Jewish people in this case, it was what was part of Austria, but now is Poland, for my paternal grandparents and for my maternal grandparents, what is now the Ukraine. So.
Yeah, junior high and high school happened to be a large percentage of Jewish students. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot. And it's interesting when other people that have experienced things that you haven't, or they're living a life that you don't understand because of their religion. And I just bring it up because I still have some great friends, and, you know, going to Passovers and I do think about that. I just watched this movie on Netflix called Transatlantic, and it's based on a true story. Have you heard of it? Yeah.
Not only have I heard of it, but one of the women whose book is being published by my same publisher in the spring, has written a book about that same story, but hers is accurate, even though it's a novel.
Gotcha.
And she is so sort of flummoxed about this transatlantic, because while on the one hand, it's getting so much attention, and that's great. On the other hand, she wants to go, but no, that isn't the way it really happened, because she did years of research.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna pull up the name of her book so that I can give her a little plug here. While we're talking, I can multitask.
Yeah, that's fine. It's She Writes Press. Is that the
publisher? That's exactly right.
Okay. Yeah, I did a little research. You know, but it's interesting. I was just looking for something to watch. And I honestly didn't know really what it was about.
I haven't seen it yet. Is it good?
Oh, I loved it.
Great.
And then they did kind of 35 minutes of, you know, how it was made, the different actors, because there were so many different languages that were used. And they made it clear that were, you know, characters were not real, except for a few people. And then even their personal stories, you know, that they've added to. But I just thought it was so well done. The way they wrote it, again, it was a way that you understand the history, you know, the horribleness of it. But then there was, you know, joy in the community and people working together. So I loved it. So,
well, her book is called The Forger of Marseille. Her name is Linda Joy Myers. And interestingly, she is not of Jewish background. She just found this story, decided that she wanted to tell it. So there you have it.
God, the world is so full of hate.
The world is so full of hate. And while, you know, I definitely want to say people try to equate the experience of some marginalized groups with others.
Why?
I
never understood that. Why?
Here's the thing, you know, the people that hate people with black skin or brown skin hate the people who are Jewish. They hate us. Even though I will say in America, in the time in which I've grown up, I have not experienced the kind of prejudices. You know, I've walked around with the benefit of white skin, which in this culture is absolutely a privilege. And I have had white privilege, even though I'm Jewish. So it's a complicated story.
I think that when I think about these issues of, you know, how they want to make some changes in history or remove things in history because it would make kids feel guilty.
And I don't even get me started on critical race theory, because I am
like, who made that up? Who made that up?
Why didn't I, in my education, ever really learn about Jim Crow and what happened? I grew up thinking that the slaves were freed and everything was good. Like, hello?
Yeah.
If you don't teach history, then history will continue to repeat itself. It's very simple.
Exactly.
You know, my mom used to always say, and maybe yours did too, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So there was this idea somehow that whatever you endured was bolstering you for future challenges. And I gotta say, I hated that expression. Like, I hated all of the count your blessings and all those. Those are so true. It is true. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Counting your blessings does get you through hard times. You know, there was a lot of wisdom in those old adages.
Right. And when you're not ready to hear it, I know when I lost my job and, you know, they say one door closes and another one opens, you know, and I just wanted to like slap somebody. It's like, stop, you know, right now I'm upset. I'm going to be upset.
Exactly. And you know what? Here's the thing. First of all, there's no shortcut, right? You have to grieve. And losing a job is a loss. It's a loss of identity. It's a loss of income. It's a loss of purpose. It's a loss. And you have to grieve your loss. Yeah. And the sooner you get in there and do it and grieve it and feel all that pain, the sooner you're going to be able to move through to the other side. But a friend of mine had a really interesting thing to say to me that I ended up including in the book because I thought it was so helpful, was that she said, you know, you can visit the pity pot, but don't be packing your bags and moving in. So I thought, you know, she's right. So I can feel sorry for myself because this sucks.
Oh my gosh.
I could not move. I mean, I was 100% dependent upon others. I could not get myself to the bathroom. I could not get myself food to eat. I couldn't lift my body up. We actually ended up renting a hospital bed for the house so that I could crank the bed up.
Oh my gosh.
It was horrible. And I hate the term control freak, but I think I probably was a control freak most of my life. I was someone who felt the need to, you know, like whenever I'm in a car with other people, I prefer to be the driver because I feel safer that way. I feel safer that way, right?
Because
I trust, right. I trust myself. I'm not sure about the other person. And in general, I just was that kind of a gal, you know, always. Having to do everything and maybe even bordering on martyrdom sometimes, but definitely, you know, doing too much for in every facet of my life. And then what happened, and this is why my book is a memoir of letting go, was that control was stripped from me in an instant. I went from being a hyper competent person with a full-time job and, you know, everything else I was doing, which I won't even go into, but I was always just doing rather than being. Didn't really know how to relax. I had two settings, on and off meant asleep. And suddenly I couldn't do anything. And I had to figure out how to find some peace and how to sort of downshift myself into a state where stillness was normal and that I could actually find a place for myself in stillness and find some power in stillness.
Well, in the field, you know, that you were in radio and then TV, you've got a house full of kids that you're responsible for, you know, you're the one keeping everything together. And also, you know, the control, I don't know if that's, you know, a popular go-to for people, but it is for me because I feel safe, though I'm really not, you know, because I can't control a damn thing, you know.
It's an illusion. It's a very seductive illusion.
It is.
And then when we are seduced by that, all kinds of other behaviors result that are not self-serving, that do not do, you know, that are just not good for you.
right.
So well, I had to learn it.
Or somebody got your attention and said, yeah, you're gonna go through something here and hopefully you'll take this time to figure some things out, you know? So
but old habits die hard. So then I got to practice. And then I had a series of other things that happened where I was like, okay, now I can see if I can practice my new skills.
Yeah. A series of unfortunate events. So you were going through then, I assume, a lot of therapy, physical therapy. And
both kinds, all kinds, because I learned that there are specific types of psychological therapy that help you that after trauma, any kind of trauma. So I did what was called somatic therapy, which is a combination of some talk therapy with some physical touch by the therapist on your body. And the goal, is to not have any of the trauma lodged in your body, which happens.
Sure.
And
was
so
something like Reiki or
I didn't do that. There are a number of different modalities that are recommended post-trauma. One is EMDR.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I didn't try that, but you know, I just tried this one. I heard about this particular practitioner who was local and she helped me. So it was good.
Good. Good. So as far as running the house, Was that your husband taking the lead on that? I mean, who's cooking and who's cleaning? You know, who's-
Well, first of all, I am very, very blessed with wonderful friends and a phenomenal community. And so the community kind of just kicked into gear, and there was a meal train. You know, people were bringing in meals. My husband is an extraordinary man. We've been married 43 years. I love him to pieces. He can't boil an egg. So his cooking is not his strong suit, nor is cleaning, actually. But he's my personal IT director. He's my producer. We are absolutely creative partners in crime. He's giving and loving, and he absolutely learned by necessity how to be a caregiver. So, you know, he had to manage all my meds, deal with, I mean, there was so much to deal with. First of all the different doctors and physical therapists and the insurance company and the personal injury attorney, because of course it was a case.
A full-time job.
It was a full-time job. And fielding phone calls and doorbells ringing with food and flowers and this, that, and the other, and guests. And so, yeah, he really, really had his hands full, and he did an incredible job. I have no idea how the house got cleaned, because maybe it didn't. I don't know.
Right. It's, yeah.
We were in the middle of a construction project. We had just moved into this house. Check this out. We had moved into this house 5 weeks before the accident. So we weren't even fully moved in, because like an idiot, I only took off like 2 days from work, which
were
literally the moving days. And then I was working full time. So I didn't, you know, I hadn't fully moved in.
Right.
And we had two construction projects going on. One creating his studio. He's a recording engineer. And one in this other room that we were trying to turn into a laundry room.
Oh my gosh.
So there were contractors coming in and out, and they would ask me, Fred would come and ask me for my opinion on something, and I'd say, I don't care. I don't care. Should we use this or this?
My meds.
You decide. Is it time for my meds? That was always the question.
Right.
Is it too soon for another dosage?
Yeah. Who's taking me to the bathroom, and what is for dinner? Where are my new pajamas? Oh man, that's a lot.
It was a lot. And my children, my sons helped out a lot. People say, you know, you have to have daughters for this purpose, but no, sons can help.
Absolutely.
They were great.
Did you feel any guilt at all, or, you know, for all the things that everybody, you know, you're in this place where you probably hate it, because you're so used to, like you said, taking charge. That's what you do. That's your thing.
I take care of them. They don't take care of me. What is this? Absolutely. I remember being in the hospital and at a particularly low point, the pain was so severe. They gave me, Dilaudid on top of the morphine, and I kind of hallucinated, and I knew I was saying things that didn't make any sense. And I remember just being mortified, because even though my son and his, at the time, girlfriend, now wife, were there, and they were smiling, and they said, Mom, we know you're medicated. This is the narcotics talking. But I was out of control, and out of control to me was the worst possible thing to be.
Yeah. Yeah. How long was this process?
The full recovery took about a year and a half.
Whoa.
The full recovery. But I was able to get around with a walker after a couple months. I mean, when I say get around the house.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Get around the house. Well, because for the first 6 weeks, I couldn't put any weight at all on my right side. So okay. I was able to sort of hop, not even, I can't even explain. I was like, basically the upper part of my body was carrying all my weight. So I was in good shape when the accident happened. So that was also good. I mean, muscle tone wise.
Yeah.
That made a difference. And I'm healthy, or I was.
Yeah. I know, even when you're like down for a couple of weeks, you can lose so much muscle. you know, in your body. But like you said, you were at least starting off pretty healthy. I mean, were there, I'm sure there were those days when you were just like, I just want to lay here in bed. Were there, did you have those days when you just didn't want to see anybody or talk to anybody?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, lots of ups and downs, mostly downs. Lots of self-talk to try to, you know, snap myself out of it.
Yeah.
And I was very blessed because I was surrounded by love. And that is huge. Absolutely huge. I remember dealing with disability because my sick leave ran out and I wasn't able to go back to work yet. And I had to go on disability, and it's horrible.
Everybody needs an advocate, somebody that can help you, somebody on your side, whatever it is.
So true.
And I'm so glad that, you know, that your family was there for you, that your friends were there to support you.
That's, and now, you know what, one of the many changes I've made in my life is that I've vowed to be there for everybody as much as I can. If it means sending a text that says I'm thinking about you, if it means dropping off a meal.
That's huge. Yeah.
And that is part of what I vowed as I was getting better. I said, like, what are the changes that I want to make in my life so that this experience, as awful as it was, has profound and lasting impact on making me a better person. And it's been 11 years, so I know it's not just a flash in the pan. I really have made some big changes in my life as a result that I'm not going to go back on.
Like what?
I meditate. I sit in silence and quiet my mind, which allows me to think before speaking, to pause before reacting. Another one is understanding that different people in my life have different degrees of being able to be intimate or being able to show up for people. And
that's a tough one.
My way isn't the only way. You know, I am someone who, I'm a big hugger. I'm a big in your face. What can I do when something is awful? I know a lot of people disappear because they don't know what to say, and the whole situation makes them feel uncomfortable.
They didn't have it to right. give.
And so I had to tell myself that that doesn't mean they're bad people. That doesn't mean I should erase them off the face of the earth. That doesn't mean that they don't have a place in my life anymore. What it means is that I can't expect this from them. So it's like duly noted. This happened to me when my immediate family members passed away. I had a friend who didn't show up. And I remember talking to her about it. And she said, yeah, I don't do death. Like, I just don't do death. And she's still in my life because she does a lot of other things that are great. And I know that when she has a loss, I'm going to show up for her because I do death, right? I show up. And I know what it feels like to lose a loved one. And I know how meaningful it is to have people show up and be present with you and your pain. So I'll be there, even though she couldn't be.
Well, she was honest with you too, though. I mean,
yeah, she's definitely somebody you want to celebrate with. She's a great celebrator.
So that must have been, you know, and part of your journey, the physical, the emotional, but also maybe seeing some relationships differently or that change, like you said, that having a sick child and people thinking about their own fears or their children and just can't, they can't even be there for themselves or their own family. That's understandable. And that's just the way things go.
It was basically like coming to terms with acceptance when it was something that I could accept, and being understanding and compassionate and hopefully less judgmental. I think often we get caught in our own judgments. That doesn't serve us either.
No.
But having an open heart and being able to be compassionate and empathetic, and also not to have the answers, to be able to say, well, I don't really know why they're behaving that way, but they must have a reason, or there must be some circumstance in their life that's preventing them from showing up for me. And maybe
they get to be who they are. They get to be who they are.
Absolutely.
Then you decide from there. Is that okay? You
know, exactly.
Okay for me.
Exactly.
Wow. You know, and I think about that 12 years ago, but at some point, the things that you learned, like you said, meditating, changing the way you look at people and how they react and having a being less judgmental and having more understanding and focusing on yourself, of course. Did your husband or your kids change in any kind of tangible way after the accident?
I would say that my husband's and my relationship changed for the better. We've been married, it's going on 43 years. In June, it will be 43 years that we've been married. And we are very much best friends. We laugh a lot together. We do things together. We really enjoy being together. But there's a new and deeper level that I think we've been able to reach of appreciating one another more than we ever did before. And I certainly know that I can rely on him in ways that I didn't know before, not because he had shown me otherwise, but because he hadn't had the chance. There hadn't been an opportunity to show me what he was capable of.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that we very much regard what we have as very precious and worthy of protecting. And I think it's anyone who's been married a long time happily will tell you that it requires a lot of compromise and that bottom line is kindness, you know?
You have to like each other, for gosh sake.
Well, you absolutely have to like each other. And he makes me laugh. You know, I think he's adorable. I feel deeply loved, which, you know, having lost all of my immediate family members, my original family members, my mother, my father, my sister, and my brother, it would be pretty sad if I didn't feel loved by my husband. So,
yeah.
But I feel really loved. So that's even better. And, you know, with my relationships with my sons are constantly evolving. It's very tricky to go from having children to having adult children.
Yeah.
Your role changes enormously. Once they have their own significant others, you're not that person to them anymore, that you're not their go-to. That requires adjustment.
I didn't think about that.
Both my kids are married, so she comes first. I don't, as it should be. I'm lucky. I love both my daughters-in-laws. It's daughters-in-law. I love both my daughters-in-law. I know, isn't that crazy? It's not daughters-in-law.
No. I know.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those funny things. So yeah, life is pretty great, I have to say. And to be now 69 years old, so I'm kind of looking over there at 70.
Young chick.
I've got a book coming out, my first. And I'm guessing my only, because I don't think I'm going to start a project like this again.
You never know.
You never know. You're right.
I start the second podcast. I mean, I love it because it's fun. You know, and love the titles. You know what's going to happen. I lost my phone. I was really hoping you would have found it. That's what I was thinking.
Didn't find the phone. Got a new phone. All is well. Well, the new episode today is a love letter to my hometown.
Oh, yes, I did see that. I didn't realize that came out today, but
that's called In This Story, and it's on all the podcast platforms, and it's only 3 minutes, which I think for those of us with a limited attention span, which I think is everybody.
Yeah, nowadays, I found it on Apple.
Great.
No problem. You have the transcript there, so I was just kind of just started reading it, you know.
Yeah.
So that's great.
They're all essays. So I figured, why not just put the whole thing in? They're short.
Yeah.
So here's my plan, April. I'm going to continue doing that because those micro essays are a blast for me. And I have like three in my head right now that I just haven't had the time to sit down and write, but I've got three percolating right now. So
I love that.
I feel like, and as long as Fred is willing to produce them, he does all that music and it's a fun creative project for him. So
yeah, I was a little jealous. I was like, well, how did she get on that?
Yeah.
But that's great. because
what we do, you know, so it's fun for us.
Right. Yeah.
It's fun for us, true. You know.
You know, really enjoyed getting to know you. I certainly want us to stay in touch.
Likewise, April, you're a delight. And I just want to make sure your listeners know that Apple Podcasts listed you as new and notable, which is how I found you. I reached out to April and she said, well, how did you hear about my podcast? I said, well, because you're on New and Notable. And she said, say what?
Exactly. I was like, what do you mean? You know, then you sent me that phone.
New and what? Maybe it just happened that day or something. I don't know. Yeah.
I just thank you so much for just being open and sharing your story and the lessons you've learned. And they're all so familiar. I mean, every time you'd mention something, I'm like, oh my God, yes. You know, so you know that the listeners are saying the same thing. You know, I always say
universal stuff.
Yes. We're not out here in this world alone. Listen to this. Get some meaning from these stories that people share. Know that you're going to be okay. Somehow you're going to be okay, you know, but you have to believe that you're worth it. You have to believe that you have value. All those other voices in your head, you know, from old family, you know, I always call my family kryptonite, you know, they just hobble you. Just leave them behind. So thank you again, Joanne. Let's please stay in touch. And I've got that info I want to pass on to you, okay?
Great. I look forward to it. And I hope people can pre-order the book. It won't be out until June 20th. But if you go on Amazon or any bookstore, you can order By Accident, A Memoir of Letting Go. And it's a quick read. And there's lots of laughter in there, too. So I think people will be entertained.
I think so, too.
Thank you, April.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me today on Living in Midbloom. I hope you found this episode insightful, meaningful, and maybe it's given you something to think about. I invite you to share your positive reviews or ideas on topics you would like me to touch on by leaving your comments on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, Podchaser, or Podcast Addict. We are all divine beings who just want to be seen, heard, and loved. Have a beautiful day.